You're listening to the Ready, Set, Cloud podcast, a show about trending and difficult topics in serverless and in the cloud. Today, we're going to dive into a serverless showcase app called Scanner. This application has taken full advantage of serverless services to turn data lakes as we know them on their head. By using the fast scaling properties of Lambda, Scanner can run petabyte scale queries on your data lake in seconds. I brought Cliff Crossland on the show to talk about how he built it and give us a little more details on what a data lake actually is. Ready, set, let's go. There are a few words in modern computing that make my eyes gloss over when I hear them. Kubernetes and Web3 are a couple of examples that pop into my head right away. I know what they are, but I don't really know much about them. Another big one that I'm embarrassed to admit is data lake. I thought it was just a database that had multiple input sources, and it turns out I am very wrong on that. So I brought Cliff Crossland on the show to set the record straight. Cliff, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Alan. Great to be on with you.
It's great to have you. Now, you're the founder and the CEO at Scanner, so why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is and what it does, but I would also love to hear about yourself and how you ended up where you are.
Scanner is a really fun project. What we do is we supercharge data lakes, and so we can talk a lot about what a data lake is and what it means to do queries at massive scale. But basically, what Scanner does is it provides really, really fast security investigation search on huge, huge data sets. So security teams, they often have the requirement to hold around like a year or multiple years of data. And if you're using a really expensive tool like Splunk or Datadog or IBM QRadar, they're unbelievably expensive because of the sort of like old school traditional architecture they have. But with serverless tech, which we can get into, there's a much, much better way to do it, which is using a data lake approach, which is basically low cost, really cheap storage with lots and lots of different data sources of different formats, but making it extremely fast. Usually data lake searching and querying is super slow, despite the fact that it's cheap. But in our case, we've discovered a fun way to make the queries unbelievably fast. And we rely a lot on REST and Lambda functions for that, which we can get into. But yeah, we just try to make querying on huge data sets really, really fast and use really, really low cost storage for it. So like S3, which is like pretty common in data lakes. And yeah, I can go into how we got started a little bit. So our story is we were both lead engineers at another startup that was acquired by Cisco. And we had a massive spike in log volume where our Splunk bill grew from like $10,000 a year to $1 million a year. And so the CFO of the startup was just like, okay, this is not okay. Like we gotta do something about this. And so what we ended up doing is we retained like an hour of logs for a while. And that was terrible because then if you had a problem, you'd lose all of the data related to the debugging that you were doing or the security logs that you were collecting. And so like 1 hour of retention is clearly crazy. And so we ended up dumping logs into S3, which is a very common place to put data lake data. The problem with S3 though is searching through it is unbelievably slow. So it's basically like, we moved them into a place where we could store them cheaply, but then it became a huge blind spot. We couldn't go and search through the logs very quickly at all. At Scanner, my co-founder and I decided, okay, well, what if you could have really, really cheap storage for massive data sets where you're generating on the order of 1, 2, 3 terabytes a day or more and still have fast search with long-term retention. So that's where Scanner was born. We played a lot with REST and Lambda functions and discovered, okay, we can actually do something really interesting here by changing the way we organize data in S3. Yeah, but that's a little bit about what Scanner does and how we got started. But it's been a lot of fun. The bigger and bigger companies who are working with us, they are generating like 3 terabytes, 5 terabytes a day, which is pretty wild. But they've never been able to have fast search on them. So it's been really fun to allow them to have fast search and long-term retention on these massive log data sets without spending millions of dollars a year. We just thought that was totally crazy and something had to be done about it.
That is so cool. I feel like some of the best products that exist today have emerged from passion projects, which really sounds like the beginnings of Scanner to me. So you explained conceptually what a data lake is, or at least how the data is structured, and I'm still a little bit unclear. Like, the reason I'm unclear is because I think of a data lake as a cloud resource. So in my head, I'm lumping it with things like a DynamoDB table or a Lambda function, and things kind of like that. Am I thinking about it the wrong way?
That's a great question. The funny thing about data lakes is there are many different definitions for them, but I'm going to just give a couple of concrete examples about the different kinds of data lake tools that you might see out there, and maybe it'll make a little bit more sense. But I think the reason why it's hard to know what a data lake is because everyone has a different definition. So one example is Amazon Security Lake. This is a cool piece of data lake technology. And the idea behind the Amazon Security Lake is they pull in logs from many different sources for you. I think there are like 30 or 40 different vendors that they pull in logs for, and then they store it in S3. And then you can use Amazon Athena to execute queries across these data sets. Another example of a data lake is Databricks. Databricks is a cool company. They have a term they call the data lake house. So that's a little bit of a blend between a data lake and a data warehouse. A data warehouse is like a giant analytical database where you execute massive scale queries. An analytical database is going to have massive batch uploads. And then the idea is that your analysts behind the scenes will execute really big queries on this data warehouse data. A data warehouse, you can think of as a bunch of different SQL tables. And a data lake is different from a data warehouse where you dump in the data raw. So a data lake might consist of a bunch of different file types in cheap object storage. So you might see JSON files in there, CSV files. The idea is you load the data in raw into a data lake. There are many different types of data that go into your data lake, and then you run a single tool on top of that data to run queries. And that tool is smart about parsing the different kinds of files that you have in your data lake. I would say also a data lake can be extended beyond just having lots of different file types that you can query in object storage. So you might have some files in S3, you might have some files in Google's object storage and also Azure Blob storage, but you also might have connectors to an Oracle database or a MySQL database. And so your data lake is just like a mix of lots of different file types. And the idea, a data lake tool's job is to provide a single interface to go and interact with all of those different kinds of data. So you can execute like one query and then it will go hit your Oracle database and then join it together with results from scanning JSON in S3 and also join it with data in Kafka. What a data lake house is basically a blend between the data lake, where it's just crazy data of lots of different formats, and a data warehouse where everything is super structured into SQL tables. And a data lake house gets your data lake files into a more structured format so that queries on them are more efficient. A common file format for data lake houses is Parquet, which is a more structured data format than just flat JSON files. But yeah, there are many different ways to think of a data lake. The way I think of it is just like a giant amorphous collection of lots of different data types, lots of different data sources that you try to interact with from one interface. But yeah, that's a rough outline of how I see data lakes.
Okay, so in a data lake, the data is not normalized. It stays in its original shape, but just gets added to the lake. So which part, this is going to sound like a silly question, which part is the data lake? Is it the collection of data, or is it the layer that sits on top that's responsible for figuring out how to parse and query all these things? Or is it both? I really just don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that it's both. You might have a strategy to say, as part of our data lake, we're just going to dump all of our logs from these different tools into S3. And then we're going to use Amazon Athena on top to go and query them. So the combination of Athena plus all of the different data sources you have, that might be your data lake altogether. And then you plug in other things to your data lake and suddenly that becomes part of your data lake. I think the reason why it's called a lake is because it's just very amorphous.
I remember when I was in physics back in college, lake was always the example that we used when we were learning about entropy. So we would learn about entropy. We'd learn about how things just get more and more complex the more they move around and get added to. And really, when thinking about it, at least from your definition of a data lake, it sounds like a very appropriate term. It sounds like there's a lot of entropy that happens over time as you add data, as you add multiple sources in there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're a mess. That's why there are a lot of tools that try to clean up data lakes and make them easier to interact with. Everyone has a different approach to try to make sense of the massive amounts of data that they have. And the theme that we found is they're all slow, and we wanted to build something that was fast.
All right, let's talk about the secret sauce. How do you do it differently to make it fast?
What we do is we index data in S3. Scanner doesn't interact with other kinds of databases. Like, it's not going to connect to MySQL or Oracle or whatever directly. We will tackle the part of your data lake that sits on top of S3, and we're AWS only for now. In the future, that could change, but we love a lot of the Amazon-like serverless features. But anyways, what we do is we will analyze all of the different files in your data lake. We deploy Scanner in the same AWS region, and you just give us permission to read those buckets, and then we create these index files. And these index files are stored in your S3 bucket as well. And when you execute a search, we spin up a large number of REST-based Lambda functions that go and traverse through these index files very rapidly. And they will narrow down the search space dramatically. So if you do a query in Amazon CloudWatch or Amazon Athena, it might take 30 minutes because it does scan a huge amount of data. Especially if your time range is like, go look for this event that happened over the past 6 months. But in Scanner, we have an index from every single token and every number that appears. We have these summarized index data structures, skip lists and min-max lists and lots of different things that we have on the back end, but they're all in S3, and the Lambda functions go and traverse them very rapidly and minimize the search space. So if you have a 100 terabyte data set and you're searching for a couple of IP addresses or like all of the activity ever from a user, then what we do is Scanner will narrow it down to maybe like 100 gigabytes or 50 gigabytes of data. And then because REST is so fast and S3 has high bandwidth, that will finish in 2 or 3 seconds instead of waiting like 30 minutes or something to finish. So that's like at a high level how Scanner works and why we love serverless tech so much.
Cool. So we're just going to dive in because you piqued my interest with that explanation. So how do you divvy up this work? I'm going to assume, like, let's imagine you have a 100 terabyte data set and you spin up, and I'm going to throw a random number out there. I don't know how it actually is, but 100 Lambda functions go in and divvy up this work. How do you assign the segments or the parts of the index to each one of these Lambda functions so they're not stomping on each other and looking at what each other's looking at?
So what we do is we use ECS Fargates to do the indexing. If someone dumps in a mass amount of data or something, that scales really, really nicely. We don't have to mess around with Kubernetes to handle that. But anyways, what that does is as files appear in S3, in your S3 buckets, they will get indexed and we'll generate these small index files that then get merged together over time into larger and larger index files. But when a query occurs, there's a MySQL database that has metadata about all of the index files and then the time ranges that they span. And so we say, okay, if your query is over this particular time span, let's look at all of the index files whose time ranges intersect with that time span. And then we'll launch one Lambda function per index file. And that Lambda function's job is to figure out, okay, given the query, let's find all of the, we call them pages, but these like find all of the regions of logs that contain the tokens in the query in the appropriate way. That's all done with a Redis queue. And then each of those will then spawn a bunch of tasks into Redis again. And all of those tasks are simply to go and scan the particular page of logs that was considered to be a hit by the query planning lambdas. And so then those all happen super, super fast. We're getting speeds like pretty common, like 500 gigabytes per second. We get up to a terabyte a data scan per second sometimes. But the nice thing is that the search space gets shrunk down so far for your typical query that it takes just like a handful of seconds to run your query. Even if you have 100 plus terabytes, 500 terabytes, a petabyte, it's still quite fast.
That's impressive. Let me throw out what may or may not be an edge case and see what you do for situations like this. So we all know that Lambda has a concurrent execution limit per AWS account. By default, it's 1,000, and for brand new AWS accounts, it's actually 100. But how do you go about getting around that? Like, what if somebody wanted to search across all time, across everything in there, and there's more than 1,000 index files? What do you do to make sure that A, you don't throttle yourself, but B, make sure that you're not throttling a serverless application that's also running in that AWS account?
That's a great question. The way that it works is we launch Scanner into a unique AWS account that we actually manage. And so there are no other Lambda functions running in that particular AWS account, which is nice, but we do use all 1000 Lambda functions. And in some regions, it's only 500, which is kind of a bummer. But despite that, there are queries that have 10,000 index files or tens of thousands of index files to get through. Each index file can be analyzed very rapidly within like less than a second. It's often like a few hundred milliseconds. So we can still get through a lot with even just a thousand Lambda functions. But that is an unfortunate upper limit on one Scanner instance. But the cool thing is you can spin up more than one Scanner instance if you want, and we'll spin it up for you. And a Scanner instance is like an AWS account where we deploy Scanner. And so you can run across all of those Scanner instances simultaneously if you want multiple thousands of Lambda functions. But so far, even for people who generate 1 to 2 to 3 terabytes of logs per day, 1,000 Lambda functions is more than enough, which is nice.
Yeah. So you said something that stuck out to me, and I want to make sure I get a clarification. Early on, you said that your data is indexed and stored in S3, and that's stored in my account. So if I was using Scanner, that would live in the ReadySet Cloud AWS account. But then you just said that Scanner is running in a Scanner-owned account. So you have cross AWS account permissions that are set up to get the Lambda functions over here to communicate with my AWS account, specifically that S3 bucket?
That's right. Yes. So like all of the compute runs in the AWS account that's managed by Scanner, and then all of the storage is in the user's account in the same region. So you don't have to worry about data transfer costs over the internet or between regions. It's free S3 data transfer between S3 Lambdas, which is nice. But yeah, that's right. So the storage is in the customer's account, and using IAM roles, we get permission to write to a Scanner index files bucket in their account and then read any of the S3 buckets that they choose to be indexed.
Got it. Okay. Now, I like that strictly from a point of view that you're moving the compute costs to you versus me. I see a lot of companies, a lot of startups that deploy resources into your AWS account, and you subsequently have to pay for the service and the compute that they're running inside of your account. So that's really nice that you're taking that on for us. Let's talk about data ingestion and how your indexes grow over time. Let's say I had a serverless application. It was running 1,000 unique Lambda functions that are all doing their own thing. How does it go from execution to be able to query? How long does that process take?
So we capture all of our Lambda function logs in CloudWatch. And so we have set it up in our own environment to push all of these logs to S3. So there are a couple of ways to do that. You can use Kinesis Firehose, or you can even use like a Lambda subscription to pull your CloudWatch logs and put them into S3 or something like that. Kinesis Firehose does have a long batch delay, which we found kind of annoying. It's like sometimes 30 seconds or even a minute before the CloudWatch logs get collected in Kinesis Firehose and then pushed to S3. But as soon as the S3 object appears, we get an SQS notification, and then we immediately start indexing it. We push that file into S3 and we store metadata in MySQL. So right away, we have a small index file ready to be queried. And then over time, that index file is going to be merged with other small ones, and they're going to get larger, and they atomically swap in. But on our side, the delay is on the order of a few seconds to once the S3 object is available. But it just depends. Sometimes there's some lag we've noticed between like Amazon creating CloudWatch logs and those logs getting into Kinesis Firehose and then getting uploaded into S3. It depends on how quickly you can get stuff into your S3 bucket.
That's pretty impressive, because you said that the indexing process is run through Fargate, right?
Yes.
So there's a trigger. Something happens in the source system. A Fargate task is being spun up. It's consuming the new log files out of S3, indexing them, and saving them back into S3. And then it's also updating that manifest that you said that you're storing in MySQL or something. And that's all just happening in a few seconds. That's pretty impressive.
Thanks. I mean, it's really REST. The ECS tasks are kind of always around, and they're just pulling SQS. And when an SQS message is available that there's a new S3 object, then they'll jump in. And as that SQS queue, if it ever grows, then the SQS task count also grows dynamically. And then the queue gets drained, the task count gets small again. Although Amazon doesn't drain ECS tasks very quickly, which is annoying. So we proactively say, okay, yes, drain now. We had a giant batch, but now please, I don't want to run 100 ECS tests anymore. I want to go back to one or two.
That's so fascinating. And what I'm piecing together here is really the secret that makes Scanner so good and so fast is not necessarily the indexing mechanism, but rather it's how you're taking advantage of serverless for its fan-out compute capabilities, really on both sides of it, on the indexing side, but also on the querying side as well.
Yes, definitely. We just basically see that the way that logs are done traditionally is with tools like Splunk or Elasticsearch, you have this really brutal stateful cluster where the compute and the storage are together on the same machine. And with logs, the writing is way, way higher than the reading. And so it just makes a lot of sense to put logs into S3. And it doesn't make sense to keep a huge amount of compute around all the time. And so that's why at query time, it's really fun to be able to launch, you know, 1,000 Lambda functions from nothing. And REST cold start time is like 30 milliseconds-ish. They'd spin up very rapidly and then disappear again. And so the cost is so tiny. I've been always surprised at like even our biggest users, the amount of Lambda compute cost, because the queries only take a few seconds, it's like tens of dollars or something. You know, like, but if you do a crazy query and like do wildcard over a year of data, that's going to consume some Lambda capacity. But if you're doing smart searching and stuff, serverless is so beautiful at that. You just get compute capacity when you need and a lot of it very quickly. And then it goes away and that keeps everyone's costs low. Whereas other old school log tools, they're unbelievably expensive. It shouldn't have to be that way.
Totally agree with that. So is there anything that the speed and the way that you've indexed things and just the abilities of Scanner in general, is there anything now that we can do that historically or with other products would either have been too difficult or not possible to do?
Yeah, so there are two really interesting use cases that we've seen from the security teams who are using Scanner. One is there are kind of a couple of different classes of logs and really important audit logs like CloudTrail logs, GitHub logs that show you really high importance security events. Those people are used to sending to Splunk. They're used to sending them to Datadog or to Elasticsearch. But then other kinds of low value, but extremely high volume logs like VPC flow logs are just dumped into S3 and they're not really used in the search process. But because Scanner is so much cheaper because it's just S3 storage and these elastic Lambda functions, you can now start to do queries where you look for an IP address, not only in your login logs, your high value audit logs, but that IP address can also be cross-correlated with your VPC flow logs and see like, okay, is this attacker getting like what specific network adapters in AWS are they touching? And is their VPC flow, is their network flow being rejected or is it being accepted? That's a new thing. So being able to do these queries on way bigger data sets is really awesome. And the other thing is just being able to query across lots of history. A study from IBM mentioned that it takes on average 270 days to both find and mitigate a breach on average, which is crazy. And a lot of log tools only have 30 to 90 days of history, but in Scanner, you'll have like a year or multiple years of history because it's just an S3. It's pretty cheap to keep it all. And you can say, okay, well, this IP address that's showing up in my logs over the past couple of days is scaring me. I want to see all of their activity for all time. And in Scanner, you can actually get that data rapidly. If it's like a petabyte scale data set, if it's 100 terabytes, it might take like 3 or 4 seconds. And then what you can do is you can then start to push those logs into Splunk or into your expensive log tool to do deeper analysis on a subset. If you have a bunch of stuff set up in your Splunk, you can do that. And so Scanner is very helpful for making sense of long-term history. So two things that you couldn't do before. One is just a lower value, but higher volume logs that you still want to look at. You can now look at finally and get fast search on. And then, billions of log events a day, which would cost you millions of dollars in Datadog. And the other cool thing we can do is just long history searches that are fast.
Let me ask you a question that's more existential of Scanner. Now, you've mentioned a couple times that it's a security data lake, but can you use it for things other than security?
Yes, that's interesting. We actually have a couple of teams who just use it for application logs. We did find that it tends to be the case that application developers don't need a lot more than a few weeks of log retention. And so they tend to be okay with things like Datadog, even though it's kind of expensive. But with a couple of the teams, they keep 6 months or a year of logs in their S3 buckets and Scanner indexes them. And then they can answer questions that customers have about activity from months ago. And that can be very helpful because that's a very slow process and other tools slowly scan S3. But yeah, some people definitely do. And I feel like that is maybe the next frontier after we really nail the security use cases, expanding to other kinds of logging and observability generally.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So let me ask you, what are the features of Scanner that help facilitate security? Like, what are the features that you've added that make it a security data lake application?
Yes, one is detection rules. So the ability to write queries that are running all the time continuously on the data that's flowing in, and then those will trigger detection events, which then can be sent to your team. So this particular pattern, it looks scary, or someone is deleting users from AWS, those go to PagerDuty or Slack or to your SOARs, SOAR, which is a security orchestration and automated response tools. So you can send webhook requests off to those. And the other thing that we do for the security use case is just very easy connectors to other tools to pull their security logs into your S3 buckets. And then you can start to build your data lake, your amorphous data lake with your security log data. And then we index that for you. So basically the alerts and the integrations to pull in logs are the two things that we really focus on for security. But then generally running queries, like you could do detection alerts for observability, like my error rate is above a certain value or warnings are higher than expected or something, and send me an alert when that occurs. Those are things that might be very much applicable outside of security.
Gotcha. Okay, Cliff, so we're running a little bit low on time. And if people wanted to try out Scanner, or if they have a question for you, where should they reach out and how would they best find you and Scanner?
You can check out the website at scanner.dev. There's a button to get a demo, which is a meeting with me. And I'd be really excited to show you what we have. And then what we do is if you give us the name of the AWS region that you're in, we deploy an instance of Scanner for you to do a free trial for 30 days. And then we'll do a concierge onboarding with you to make sure that your S3 logs can be indexed properly with the right permissions. And then we love to get this in people's hands and get their feedback and see if it's helpful. That's the best place to get in touch, or hit us up on LinkedIn or Twitter. You can find us there too.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Cliff. I have learned so much. But also, this has been like one of the coolest examples of taking advantage of serverless that I've seen in a long time. And you're doing it in production, like you're doing it for real. So it's really nice to see something that's much more than a proof of concept actually take advantage of it. So well done. And thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Alan.
All right. We'll talk to you later. That's it for this episode of the Ready, Set, Cloud podcast. Be sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts to stay up to date on the latest episodes. For more info on trending cloud topics, be sure to visit ReadySetCloud.io and sign up for the Serverless Picks of the Week newsletter. I'm Alan Helton, and we're out of here.